Yo, what's good, everyone? Welcome to the Forbidden Technique Podcast with your boys, Silas and Christian. We've been away for a couple weeks, just general Apex card fatigue. I might have mentioned this before, but I do have a theory that COVID was actually a UFC conspiracy to normalize no crowd events so that they didn't have to actually put together main events that could sell a gate, so that they can just fill the space between every actually good card with just interchangeable, meaningless, whatever guys were available to fight that day in their fucking empty warehouse. There was a kind of novelty to the Apex cards when they first started. Now it feels like just watching a bunch of really mid-level gym smokers.
Yeah, when the fights were still really good because the fighters were so anxious and had been out for a few months and not able to train. Like, that shit was sick, because then fighters are coming in, like, terrified.
Yeah, and when they actually had to still make good fights in no-crowd arenas, because that was the only way you could do events for a certain period of time. We're well beyond that now, and now the UFC is just relying on the ESPN deal to actually make money for these events and just trying to keep their agreement to put on 900 events a year and save everything of actual meaning for big pay-per-views and, on occasion, travel cards where they actually still go to arenas and put on good fight nights like they used to. Anyway.
Got the third, like, shitty fight card in a row.
Fourth?
Four? Is it fourth?
Yeah.
There's Alan Curtis, Blanchfield Fiora, Rivas. I mean, yeah, it's fourth in a row.
Yeah, so we're just going to do a little roundup of all of the stuff that we liked off of these last few cards. We're just going to sort of go backwards in time and forget more and more as we go back until we kind of just trail off and eventually end the podcast in really unspectacular fashion. So let's go ahead and get started with that. We got Brendan Allen versus Chris Curtis. Now, I like this one because this was supposed to be Brendan Allen versus Marvin Vettori, because, of course, Brendan Allen is on a really impressive win streak and deserves an actual name at middleweight and a good ranking spot. And Marvin Vettori pulled out, and Chris Curtis was positioned to go ahead and swoop in on a matchup that he already won because of having a favorable style matchup against someone with a dramatically higher ceiling than him. And now is it like, well, after then beating this guy who goes on to do much more impressive things in the division than him, can he just like swoop back in and just yoink his ranking? Because despite Brendan Allen having made a lot of improvements in that time, I'm not sure that any of those improvements actually give him a get better matchup against Chris Curtis.
Yeah, he's still pretty bad about like circling into getting overhanded when he jabs. He likes to like give his body up in exchanges in order to get away. He moves backwards straight a lot, and he likes to pull people in straight, which is something that is going to happen a lot. He's going to have a lot of collisions with Curtis, but Curtis has such a good chin and he's really hard to take down. So it's a bad matchup for Allen off the physical matchup, but he should have the tools at this point to just strand Curtis at range and circle. like many people since have shown works pretty well against Chris Curtis.
Yeah, and I guess which is exactly what Brendan Allen did against Punahele Soriano, another kind of relatively low pace, plodding southpaw counterpuncher, in which Brendan Allen kind of really showed all of the stuff that he's been working on with Henry Hooft in that fight, and just kind of torched Puna from distance and was the one who made a lot more use of the open stance dynamic. It looked like he was the southpaw just shredding Puna with open side body kicks.
Yeah, it's just rough for him because the Punahele fight was before the Chris Curtis fight.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Like, he had that nice little performance, and then he got his ass beat by a guy that just is kind of like a better version of that matchup. And I think that still could happen, because if you look at who he's fought since, it's Bruno Silva, who is apparently quite shot. We'll get into that later. Paul Craig, who is a light heavyweight, and Andre Muniz, who is a bit of a one trick. It's just a really bad match against Allen. Allen is a very good fighter. I'm not trying to say that like his recent resume is like a mark against him. But he hasn't fought anyone as good as Chris Curtis since then, I don't think.
That's the thing. They're just all matchups that you hear, and straight away you're like, oh yeah, Brendan Allen's going to win that.
Yeah, those fighters are worse than Chris Curtis, probably.
They're certainly different.
Certainly, yeah.
Brendan Allen, he's just as hittable as he was the first time he fought Chris Curtis.
Maybe a bit more composed when he eats shit, though.
A bit more composed when he eats shit, but like how much shit can you eat in this kind of matchup?
Yeah, and he didn't lose because he wasn't composed when he took a shot back then. He lost because he got, like, fucking hunted down. It's just a hard... Chris Curtis is hard to get away from if you aren't a good lateral mover.
Brendan Allen, it's not really in him to consistently fight off of the back foot and outmaneuver people.
Like, he likes to take it to people if he can.
Yeah, he's a Henry Hooft striker. He likes to put strong pressure on people and walk them into the fence and try and make them guess wrong and make them pay for it. You know, he was even though he mostly torched Puna from range, he was still pressuring him the whole time. I mean, he's still going to try to force the action against Curtis in a way that is probably just going to get him like slip left uppercut into the body like 900 times. And if anything, Brendan Allen has gotten less insistent about pushing a wrestling and grappling advantage.
And even then, I don't think he has one. I in this fight, I don't think he has like any real opportunity to get to the ground unless he can just take the back from standing.
This is the thing about Brendan Allen. He's one of the best jiu-jitsu players at middleweight.
Chris Curtis is one of the best takedown defenders at middleweight, though.
Yeah, and Brendan Allen has... You know, it's not like he's one of these jiu-jitsu guys who just relies on the fight getting to the ground basically by accident. He has a good reactive double leg. He just never does it, despite actually having some decent shot entries that he can go to and that he can put behind his hand. He really is falling into more of the mold of a guy who's just really good at jiu-jitsu, but wants to just be a pressuring striker so that people like panic their way into situations where he can actually grapple them a la Charles Oliveira or Nate Diaz. I do think that just puts him in prime position to just give Chris Curtis all of the counter opportunities that he needs, and that the people who concisely beat Chris Curtis on the feet have to deny him. And then even if Brendan Allen realizes that he has to wrestle, A, does he do that from a position of being behind because he's getting torched on the feet? B, can he even do that to Chris Curtis? Because dude's a fucking brick and no one ever takes him down.
And he didn't do it last time.
No.
And I don't think Brendan Allen's gotten better at jiu-jitsu. I think he's just fought people that are easier sub-sense.
I just don't think that's the basket that he's been putting his eggs in. I think he was a lot more insistent about winning fights with his jiu-jitsu earlier in his UFC career.
Yeah, and I have a theory about Chris Curtis, and it's that moving sideways against him is less of the ticket than just one-twoing him a bunch. And if Brendan Allen can just keep a consistent like jab on him, or 1-1-2, like alternate whether or not he's going to jab or throw straight. Like, if he can bait Curtis into, like, overextending and just, like, throwing a big hook to try and close distance because he's getting, like, popped from range, then I don't think it's actually that hard to draw good counter opportunities out against Chris Curtis.
No, I mean, Brendan Allen himself has a pretty nice tight left hook that would be a great counter to Chris Curtis overreaching with his left hand off the other side.
Yep, yeah, Chris Curtis loves to get 1-2'd like 5 times on his guard and like move around a bit and only take like maybe 30% of the power off from any of the shots. And then step in real fucking deep with a huge either lead hand like trying to swat you, or just step in with his rear hand and try and like start an exchange. But Allen has, in theory, the goods to be able to either just get the fuck out real fast and wait for a better engagement opportunity, or just counter him in the first layer and then get out. Because also the tie-ups are a situation that I'm actually kind of... I'm not worried for either guy. I'm just curious about how it's going to play out, because Curtis is a lot more of a let someone collar tie you and then rip a couple body shots, or grab a collar tie and then rip a shot and then like try and turn the guy and get out of the clinch. Whereas Allen, he really likes to kind of find situations in the clinch and stay there for a little while. He doesn't like to like have really short bursts of offense in the clinch and then start fucking you up at range. He likes to kind of take his time in there and then sometimes like stay against the fence for a bit just to like find his positions or get a feel for his opponent's strength. In a way that Chris Curtis likes to just use his strength. He doesn't really like to give people too many opportunities to figure out where he's weakest. So I do think that the clinch exchanges are going to be kind of telling for both fighters, because if Chris Curtis can reliably get to them, then I think he's going to beat up Allen in each of them and be able to build up some attritional damage to kind of help him with the fact that Allen's likely a lot faster footed. Because the 1-2 is the part that people aren't paying as much attention to when they're talking about Chris Curtis's recent difficulties in fights, because it's not like Kelvin Gastelum was moving around a bunch. Kelvin Gastelum was just like throwing 1-2s and making the fight even for large chunks of it, even when losing.
Which, yeah, all of that stuff has just made me think there's going to be a bunch of headbutts in this fight, and it might be another headbutt DQ no contest type situation.
Oh yeah, because Allen loves to duck into takedowns with his face in the way, and Chris Curtis loves to drop his level to defend takedowns.
Mm-hmm. Allen loves to storm the pocket, and Chris Curtis will hunker down while you're doing that, and he has a huge head.
Yeah, and also loves to like get his head in good position in the clinch, which good position in the clinch is fucking rocking your opponent's shit with a headbutt. I don't think Chris Curtis intentionally headbutts people, but he headbutts people too much for it to be something that he isn't aware of as a, like a style quirk.
Well, that's the thing. The headbutt rarely benefits him.
It almost never does.
He never gets the good end of it.
No, but he loves to do it.
It's just a result of, I think, his build and how he fights and how he.
I do think it's Chris Curtis's fault. I blame him over most of his opponents when there's headbutts in the fight. But
I mean, but again, you look at him and Kelvin Gastelum, and it's like, oh yeah, there's going to be headbutts in this fight.
Yeah, so I'm actually gonna pick Brendan Allen.
That is entirely fair.
I think he's probably gonna have good enough like damage with the kicks to kind of off put Chris Curtis's pressure, because he's a good straight kicker too, and like if you can straight kick a guy that's just gonna want to pick off shots, then it's not like Chris Curtis is like the best like catch a kick counter guy in the world. He can do it, it's not
knocked out Buckley doing exactly that.
Yeah, but Buckley's a lot different of a kicker, really predictable, different frame, I think less dangerous with the hands than Brendan Allen at this point. At least in the matchup for him.
Yeah, I mean, but Buckley has to actually give Chris Curtis his range, which basically no one else at middleweight like has to agree to that.
Yeah, and I like Joaquin Buckley, but his kicks are not exactly like the most mechanically correct things. Like if you catch his kick, he's off balance instantly, whereas Allen can actually get a kick caught and kind of maintain his composure. I say that as Joaquin Buckley has like the funniest get a kick caught and do a spin kick knockout ever, but it's not like a reliable thing. It's an outlier. Generally, he's not super great whenever you catch his kicks. There's a reason he did that once and then never did it again.
Yeah, I totally get picking Brendan Allen. He just clearly has a higher ceiling and a style that is built to win more matchups in MMA consistently.
Yeah, I think Chris Curtis just spars too much. Like, he's too much of a sparring guy to where he'll just let people have their game, whereas Brendan Allen is always... He has a level of anxiety during his fights that makes him urgent.
That, and he's a Henry Hooft guy, and Henry Hooft instills urgency in every single fighter who spends any meaningful amount of time at his camp. Hooft understands the general shape of how you need to win fights consistently in the MMA meta.
I do think it plays to Allen's disadvantage, though, that he is so aggressive in this matchup.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, all of these things have made Brendan Allen from just this, like, noodle jiu-jitsu man into a genuinely threatening and very offensively sharp, pressuring kickboxer. I just don't think it's, like, given him the tools that he needs to actually be able to shut Chris Curtis out. Because Brendan Allen has never shut anyone out of a fight. He just
unless he just finished them.
No, that's what I mean. He just has better offense than his opponent. That's how he wins. So I just feel like I got to pick Chris Curtis on my gut pick, and the fact that we've seen Chris Curtis knock the piss shit out of Brendan Allen. Also, it's funny from a narrative perspective.
It is, yeah. I want to pick Chris Curtis mainly from the perspective of I think that Brendan Allen is actually going to fight a worse fight with how much better he is now than he was last time, because now he's going to come out and try and like take it to Curtis, which is just going to funnel Curtis's offense more like into getting good damage off, because Curtis isn't going to come at him if Allen really was like, I'm just going to use the five rounds and like jab at this guy. Then he could probably like stay composed enough, but I don't expect that from him, nor do I want that from him. I want him to like take the fight to his opponent, especially since Curtis is just a better five round fighter. I think even on short notice, his style just works really well for five rounds. He's very he manages his energy very well in a way that Allen, he just has a good gas tank and then goes hard.
Yeah, Chris Curtis, this is more the result of being a long time road warrior, you know, being a guy who's fought in a ton of different organizations, probably had to take a bunch of pretty short notice fights against people who he couldn't do a lot of tape on. And he's developed this like sharp defensive counter punching game that has a lot to like about it, but is just not built within the meta of like modern high level fights in the UFC. And he's always going to struggle because of that.
Yeah, if you could get better strategic coaching into Chris Curtis, he would be... I think his ceiling is about the same as Allen's, like in theory. It's just he's older and has proven to not realize his potential as much as Allen potentially could. You know, it's just a really hard fight for me to pick because I kind of do want Chris Curtis to win. It's just Allen... it's a bit of a momentum pick for me.
Yeah, I get it.
Like, I think Allen is going to not care that he lost the first fight and, like, come out and treat him with very little respect, which could be a bad thing for him, like we said, but who knows? We got Alexander Hernandez fighting Damon Jackson.
Weird.
A guy who hates getting kneed versus a guy that loves to throw intercepting knees, but also a guy that loves to get punched while throwing intercepting knee. Fighting a guy that loves punching people throwing intercepting knees. Kind of a fun matchup in that regard.
It is. See, if this was a couple of years ago, I would be like, oh, yeah, this is one of those ones where Alexander Hernandez just instantly wipes out someone who is massively physically inferior to him. I'm probably still going to pick that. But I'm like, has Alexander Hernandez had his confidence repeatedly broken and then built back up again too many times to even be that guy who would just go out and wipe someone out who... couldn't hang in there with him physically like he did to Mike Breeden and Chris Gritsmacher. Damon Jackson is very much in the mold of those dudes, just a guy who's fucking scrappy and tries really hard, but then runs into an Alex Hernandez and it's like, there's only so hard you can ever try and it do anything for you because you're just not that guy. But then Alexander Hernandez, he had that fight with Bill Algeo, which... I heard a lot of people talking about how they were quite impressed with Hernandez in that fight, that he had sort of turned significant technical corners and really stayed really mentally focused and didn't get discouraged in the fight, despite the fact that he got his ass whooped most of the time. And I get all of that. I do think he has matured as a fighter. It's just kind of weird for me to be talking about a guy who, when he came into the UFC, people were like, man, this guy has the goods to be champion. And then be like, well, yeah, he really comported himself well in a 30-26 loss to Bill Algeo. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I'm actually going to pick Damon Jackson because Hernandez is good in many ways, and I've always appreciated him as a fighter, but Damon Jackson is, I think, kind of just a poisonous matchup for him in many regards, other than the physical aspect. And the physical aspect, I think, is probably overplayed, because Hernandez hasn't, like, physical bullied anyone that isn't a tiny fighter. or like someone that's he's just much faster than at lightweight. Because I do think Hernandez should be at featherweight. I think featherweight makes sense for him. I think his frame fits it well. I don't think he's a huge featherweight. I think he was a very small lightweight.
I see that, but there was just no point ever where I saw him fighting at lightweight, and I'm like, oh yeah, this guy's problem is he's too small.
No, you but know? Give him a fight against Charles Oliveira, like 4 years ago, and he would have looked miniature. Give him a fight against like any of the big. Give him a fight against a guy that's like an inch taller than him, and Dustin Poirier, and Dustin would look like four of him.
He didn't look minuscule versus Donald Cerrone, who was a pretty huge lightweight who had a successful career against welterweight. And he did okay in that fight. He just got Donald Cerrone'd.
No, but like you've seen how his frame can be at 145. He doesn't even look like smaller at 145, really. He has like the same frame, and he's still getting like – he's not strong for the weight, I don't think. I think he just had matchups where he fought guys that aren't going to impose much strength. If they do have an advantage, like he fought OAM back in the day and Benil Dariush, he knocked out Benny in like 2 seconds, and OAM he decisioned because OAM was kind of on the downslope, and then OAM got better after he left the UFC. So it's a win that it got better for him as time went on, but I think that OAM was just at a low point and Hernandez had momentum.
It's still a really impressive win for a guy that nascent in his career to pick up at that point.
True. I'm just looking at everyone he's fought at lightweight, and they're all kind of just like featherweights or bigger than him by a lot. he fought Hanato Moicano and was very physically weaker, like so obviously weaker.
Was he weaker, or was he just a lot worse at jiu-jitsu and like fell apart because he got pressured and torched on the feet?
I think two things can be true at once, because if he was stronger, he would have had a better first round.
Yeah, that is fair. I think more than the like physical strength, it was always the speed and power that were X factors for him at lightweight and were the defining physical characteristics that he had over guys like Mike Breeden and Chris Gritzmacher that allowed him to just roll up and just wipe them off of the face of the planet.
Well, he just isn't faster than the other people at lightweight now, like at the top level.
No, and Damon Jackson just looks like one of those guys to me. You know, he tries real hard. His whole game is just basically unstructured violence and try and just go fuck the guy up real hard.
That's actually why I'm picking Damon Jackson, because he looks like one of those guys, but he's like a lot better than Chris Gritzmacher. And like, he's a lot better than some of the like worst fighters. Like, Jim Miller, I think, is a very good fighter, but I think Jim Miller right now is worse than Damon Jackson.
But this is the thing. I don't agree with that for a start, but also my concern for Alex Hernandez.
Maybe I'm overrating Damon Jackson. I think he's a pretty good fighter.
I think he's pretty good. I think he just has a very well-defined physical ceiling.
Yeah, I just don't. I'm not sure if Hernandez is going to push that, because it still took Ige like two rounds to get Damon Jackson. Ige just kind of shirks off any physical attrition you put on him, whereas Hernandez shows it. Like, he actively displays it as much as one could possibly display fatigue.
This is the thing that does give me pause to just pick Alex Hernandez immediately, is that what if he just doesn't have it in him to just, like, walk up and kill someone at this point? What if all of the technical and mental hurdles that he's had to get over in order to be at the point of competency that he is at now mean that he's just going to try and sort of, like, capital T technical, just like outbox Damon Jackson off of the back foot and let him come forward and put his offense together? Because I don't think Alex Hernandez has the like consistent counterpunching depth of Dan Ige that won him that fight, and that meant no matter how much he was letting Damon Jackson get his game rolling, he could just land enough big shots as Jackson was coming in to repeatedly hurt him, dissuade him from exchanges, and eventually knock him the fuck out. Like, what if Hernandez really lets Damon Jackson put it on him?
Yeah, I just expect that would make Hernandez crumble. If he lasts, like, more... If the fight goes around, I think that Damon Jackson's going to win. Because Damon Jackson is a guy that it's pretty easy to go put power on him, but Hernandez likes to, like, tap you with some shots and then put a big power shot on you, whereas Damon Jackson, they give some opportunities to land knees or kicks or get out of the way. If Hernandez was a lot more cultured of a like a position taker, if he was really good at, you know, taking a nice like outside position and then blasting a huge shot, or if he was a better combination puncher or someone that can move his feet well in combination, I would be picking him very confidently. But I've seen Hernandez jump into position to land a big shot, and then the other guy just kind of move a little bit and knee him so many times that it's hard for me to pick someone that's kind of just a slower Donald Cerrone that's to lose to him. Because Damon Jackson, like, his chin isn't gone. I don't think he's, like, I don't think he's cooked or anything. He's 35, but he never had like a huge ceiling. He didn't have like a crazy long career. He got beaten and like finished a few times, but I think that's just, he fought fucking Topuria and Ige, you know? They'll do that to a man.
Also, Billy Quarantillo is very much one of those guys that I'm describing. And he had to just not get murked by Hernandez for a round and then just went fucking bananas.
Yeah, you just got to last around, then go hard. And Hernandez is normally going to try and take his foot off the gas, because if he doesn't finish you in the first round, he normally just expects that he's gonna, he's gonna have to, like, wait. You know, he's like, okay, I got to go to a decision if they go past the first round. And Damon Jackson normally gets finished in the second round, right?
Yeah, I'm still gonna pick Alexander Hernandez by first round knockout.
I understand that. Actually, he does get knocked out in the first round a good bit. But he's knocked out in the first round by people that I do consider to be better than current Alexander Hernandez.
Yeah, I'm just like, how much better do you have to be?
I'm going to pick Damon Jackson to like front kick to the body win within the first two.
I respect it.
Because Damon Jackson's tough. He can take a few shots from a guy who's... I like Alexander Hernandez, but I actually have always kind of rated his power quite weak. He is a guy who knocks people out that I don't think hits very hard. I think he hits fast. I don't think he's very powerful. I don't think he's someone that can just go up and shock someone with power like Topuria, you know, or even Ige, you know?
Okay, what else we got going on this card before we start looking back?
Chepe Mariscal versus Morgan Charrier is definitely overbooked on the card, but it's a decent fight. It's overbooked based off of what the UFC normally does, but I do think it actually fits its spot because they're both pretty good. And Johnny Walker's brother is going to fight Lucas Brzezinski. Horrible
That's
fight,
probably.
Probably
going to be bad. I like Ignacio Bahamondes versus Christos Giagos.
That's pretty good. We got the return of former champ Jermaine Durand.
Who's probably just going to knock Norman Dumont out in the first round, right?
It's been a four-year layoff.
Yeah, it's Norman Dumont, though.
Hasn't fought since Juliana Pena in 2020. And it is Norman Dumont, but Norman Dumont is tough. Pretty tough and huge. And they're fighting at 135. I mean, I guess they're both.
That is also worse for Norma Dumont because I don't think she's ever actually successfully made 135. I just can't unsee Norma Dumont getting absolutely smoked by Megan Anderson because Megan Anderson was like, I'm just going to throw a big right hand whenever you're in range.
Yeah, not just Megan Anderson. Anyone she's fought that is tall. Macy Chiasson also decisioned her.
Not a great look.
So the two tallest people she's fought won pretty... it wasn't comfortably for Chiasson, but she won, you know? I'm going to pick Norma Dumont just to get a takedown and just, like, win the fight. Pretty much it's going to be the Amanda fight. She's going to get hurt a few times and then just still win because she's getting on top.
I don't think Norma Dumont is going to be able to survive getting hurt a couple of times. And I don't, like, she's not a good wrestler or top player either.
That's fair. Ignacio Bahamondes versus Christos Giagos is very strange because the age dynamic is definitely a factor, because Christos Giagos, he's 34, but he's been on the downslope for a while. I think he's been physically past it for a couple of years now.
And he's a guy who relies on his physicality as a fighter.
Yeah, and he's just had a really rough last several fights. Like, his entire UFC run has been cursed because they've given him hard fights. His UFC debut... was Charles Oliveira in 2018.
Yeah, the life of a middling UFC lightweight is not an easy one, because you're going to have to fight, you know, Armin Sarukian and Thiago Moises back to back. Then after that, they booked him against fucking Benoit Saint-Denis.
Yeah, and he got a bit of a lighter touch in Ricky Glenn, but then they give him Daniel Zeldhuber, who's pretty good. They just keep giving him, like, really good prospects or established people that are just gonna beat the fucking shit out of him. So this is actually, this is a lighter touch for him.
Yeah, and, you know, Ricky Glenn is also good. He's just old and doesn't have a chin anymore. And, you know, if he hadn't just gotten smoked in the first round, then that actually could have been a really hard fight for Christos Giagos. And Ignacio Bohemondes, for all of his flaws, is huge and really dangerous and creative.
He is a later finisher, though, and Christos Giagos is a guy that can build up a lead. The possibility of Christos Giagos being up two rounds and getting knocked out or submitted is actually not very low. I feel like that's probably Bahamondes' best chance of winning.
It's just to get wrestle fucked for two rounds and then head kick him.
Yeah, because that will wear out Christos Giagos. Bahamondes is like squirmy and annoying to grab. So if Giagos is exerting all the energy that is probably required for him to actually build up the first two rounds as a lead, then I think the third round is just going to be hell for him. But that's if he even makes it there, because Bahamondes has been steadily improving. He might actually be able to get the ball rolling a bit sooner. That's it for this card, though. I mean, Trevor Peak is on it, but he's pretty inconsistent. We'll talk about him if he does something cool.
Yeah, is Trevor Peak even funny anymore?
I don't know.
Because a Trevor Peak who doesn't fight funny is just, like, truly wasted talent. I've got enough, like, solid athletes who are actually trying to be good and develop technique and stuff. It's too late for all of that shit for Trevor Peak, and if he actually starts trying to go down that road, then what even is the interest in seeing him I don't want to see the technical development of Trevor Peak. I want to see him knock people out with baseball punches.
As long as he's doing the baseball punches but steadily improving, I don't mind. Just his last few fights have left, or last fight left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth. In terms
Sorry,
of
was he even doing baseball punches?
He tried, just badly. It just didn't work.
I don't know. I thought he was trying to be actually good at MMA, and I don't like that for him.
I think if he gets the opportunity to do like the caveman shit, he will. But normally, if you gotta like be bad enough for him to get it off against you, you know. Yeah. Now I guess we're just gonna talk about like random quick hits from the last three cards, because. Spoiler alert, the fucking cards were garbage for the most part. And the main events were the worst fights on the card for some reason. Or on each of the cards.
Yep. He pretty much, Manon Fiorro last weekend defeats Erin Blanchfield by unanimous decision. In a result that I assume surprised literally no one. I wish we had done a podcast for this one, because that's just the easiest fight to call ever. Because Erin Blanchfield... real scrappy and tries really hard,
but not very strong and kind of small compared to Manon Fiorro.
She does not have the connective tissue in her game to really get the ball rolling in the way that she needs it to against people who physically outclass her. I mean, we saw this in the Tyler Santos fight, but it's just that Tyler Santos is not the kind of person who is able to turn that kind of fight against Erin Blanchfield, but just to make it a really ugly, sticky fight that Blanchfield wins on really thin margins by clinching Tyler Santos up against the fence, but Tyler Santos not actually doing anything about it, even though she's not letting Erin Blanchfield like progress to get the stuff done that she needs to. Whereas Manon Fiorro, as well as being huge and very physical for the division and being well-versed in the clinch, is a really dedicated lead-side dependent southpaw outfighter, which is a poisonous matchup for like sort of underdeveloped pressure wrestle boxers in MMA, because they don't know how to lead and get exchanges going against southpaws. They don't know how to deal with the distance. And this is just the kind of dynamic that we've seen a lot of recently. I feel like the scrappy wrestle boxer versus a really long kickboxer with a good clinch game is such a well-defined style matchup at this point. It's basically what Israel Adesanya built his entire legacy on, was people not being able to track him down and not get good entries on him. And their only hope to be to run him into the cage where he's really good at defending takedowns. The people who are actually going to be able to win that kind of style matchup are like Fluffy Hernandez versus Roman Kopylov, because Fluffy Hernandez is absolutely relentless and always chains his attacks together, always puts his wrestling entries behind combination punches, uses the entries that he's able to get to chain together other different kinds of takedown attempts. Whereas, like I said, that kind of persistence and connective tissue is just, it's not there in Aaron Blanchfield's game at this point.
And Joaquin Buckley tepidly finished Vicente Luque because it seemed like Vicente Luque mentally checked out. He's had like brain issues recently. He got a brain bleed from the Jeff Neal fight. And I feel like a lot of people, it's kind of like the general consensus at this point is that he's just kind of like done now. He had the one last hurrah in the RDA fight, but it was a decision against a guy that's much smaller than him.
Against really old RDA, and the whole fight was just kind of old welterweight RDA pushing Luque into the cage and then Luque being significantly larger and stronger than him. I mean, Luque was on the downswing leading up to the Jeff Neal fight, and
then he got like a career-altering beating where his brain bled.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think Luque is just cooked at this point. This is just...
We hope we're wrong.
This is not the Vicente Luque that I fell in love with when he was on his crazy run of just insane action fights and knockouts. I mean, what a time to be alive that was. Luque, for that time, is genuinely one of the most exciting fighters in the history of the sport. But it seems like he has just had the fear knocked into him that is not good for being a guy like Luque, who relies on pressure and creating like really dangerous exchanges and, you know, being able to take one to give one. You know, he's not even really pressuring anymore.
Yeah, I think a lot of his technical progression has been contributed to a kind of steep decline, because that style does not carry over well. He doesn't have the temperament for it, and he's honestly just not a deep enough or comfortable enough striker to pull it off. He relied on bullying people and having a crazy chin.
Crazy chin, crazy power. He's still having some counterpunching craft, but it was counterpunching that came as a result of the exchanges that he created coming forward and drawing people out with his jab and low kicks, and then, you know, making them fight back and him just being ready for it. You know, as it was, his problem was being too plodding and not being able to get the exchanges that he needed. If he's just going to be trying to draw people in off of the back foot and outbox people from range, that is not a style that's going to work for him, particularly if it's something that he has to switch to now because he doesn't have the physicality to run his old game that was so successful for him. So I'm not even really talking about the fight at this point, because like you said, it was pretty much just...
But it wasn't a very exciting fight. Buckley didn't really leave first gear and didn't have to. He just had to keep doing what he was doing and being annoying, doing a bunch of diagonal blitzes, and eventually it just flustered Luque enough to where he gave up.
Yeah, just... shot in for a takedown, got sprawled on, pulled guard off of it, and then
didn't try to get up at all. He wasn't even hurt, really. Every shot seemed to affect him.
Yeah, and Buckley did the smart thing that you should do and just fucking wail on the guy and just throw huge punches, even if they're not going to be devastatingly accurate. If Luque is not going to do anything to try and improve the position from there, yeah, fight's just going to get stopped.
Yeah, so good on Buckley. He did his job.
Yeah, he did his thing. He did what he needed to. He got pulled out the win. Just, it's depressing seeing Luque have this kind of downfall, you know?
Yeah, and Chris Weidman's back. He's eye-poking with the best of them. He's put back on an all-time eye-poke performance and won by eye-poke finish and got the technical decision anyways. The fight was pretty good, surprisingly. Weidman had good success. I think Silva's cooked, too.
Yes.
I think Weidman and Silva are both cooked, but Silva is a younger version of someone that is completely shot. So he's not as used to it, you know? He's still used to having all his good tools, whereas Weidman has had all of his tools taken away from him for like the last 3.5 years, 4 or 5 years.
So my favorite thing about this fight was that it was a really kicking heavy performance from Chris Weidman, and you could like hear every time he threw a kick, the commentary just like wincing in fear, just like, oh no, he's kicking. Oh, is that the bad leg? Oh no, okay, he's fine. It's all good. It's all good.
and the kicking was a good play because he's always been a pretty strong kicker, and it doesn't seem like he's lost that. He's still able to maintain the output and throw a bunch of kicks. But he won the fight by eye poking Bruno Silva twice, leading up to the actual eye poke finish, where he actually double eye poked. It was a double jab into like a. Or no, it was a jab and then a straight, but both were eye pokes, and then a left hook on like the top of the head that did nothing. It pretty much didn't land. And then they were initially like TKO, and then because it was in the third round, whenever it happened, and enough of the fight had gone by, they just put it to a technical decision.
I feel like they were just bullshit. Let's just give Chris Weidman this one, because this was absolutely
that grounds. Is what happened.
This was grounds for. A DQ, to be honest?
Oh, I think that anything but a DQ is the objectively wrong decision there, because he eye-poked so many times that it doesn't matter if it's intentional. You eye-poked your opponent so many times that normally if someone eye-pokes someone once really badly, then they lose a point. But Weidman was just up on points, you know?
The ref fucked up because he called it as a TKO and then they had to go to instant replay to review it and realize that, no, this actually was the result of a foul. But if it was a foul, then Bruno Silva should have been given his 5 minutes. So this was also kind of was just one of those cases of the ref kind of trying to have to stick by his guns.
Yeah, because they can't restart the fight after they've already stopped it, because the ref didn't see the initial eye poke.
And fights only ever get overturned if the ref admits that they fucked up, which they'll never do because they want to keep their job. But then I thought this was supposed to be the whole point of instant replay, was so that we don't have to rely on what the ref sees in a singular moment and then having to like stick by their decision and be like, well, I didn't see nothing, so I let it go, and that's what happened.
It's a gray area where this time bad refereeing, and I'm saying bad refereeing because this was a very easy eye poke to see because it was two of them back-to-back consecutively, and then a knockdown where nothing landed. So that's like, I get in the moment, it's hard to see if you're a viewer, but you're a fucking referee. Your job is to look for eye pokes. I get viewers not seeing an eye poke there, but like, I don't see how, you can tell what the ref is. He could see the eye pokes. He just didn't notice it. Even though they were fucking flagrant and had been happening over and over, so you'd expect him to be keeping a keen eye out for it. Oh, and the fight before this one, since nothing else of note happened in this one, also an eye poke finish. Trying not to go on too much of a tangent, but the sport is shaky enough at this point to where I hold it in almost no respect for MMA, because they, two fights in a row, basically gave a guy a win off of eye poking someone. And, you know, Cedricus Dumas, he's a fucking asshole, whatever. He's got the fucking, got a huge list of crimes, but
yeah, that's nothing to do with what we're talking about though.
Well, yeah, I'm saying like people are trying to be like, whatever, he's an asshole, so it's okay that he got completely fucked over by a system that's supposed to insulate against that, and there's like a bunch of rules and regulations in place to give people a fair fight.
No, you can't do that. If we're gonna like call out refs for fairness in officiating, our personal feelings about the fighters should not come into play at all.
Yeah, like every fighter should get a fair shake and not get their career heavily fucking sabotaged by bad officiating. Because you could easily see that fight and be like, oh, he got eye poked and then finished. Yeah, the fight should be a disqualification loss or no contest. I think no contest in this scenario, because I don't really blame Nursultan Ruziboev. I thought he was putting on a pretty good performance leading up to it. He did everything he was supposed to. His opponent turned away without the ref protesting.
Oh, and this was a huge mismatch as well.
Ridiculous mismatch. One of the most experienced fighters in the UFC, who had a huge experience record before he even got to the UFC.
Against someone who just should not be here yet.
Yeah, someone who was not even UFC level, and it was a massive mismatch where he was losing, and then he also got fouled into getting a shitload of brain damage and like a cut, you know? He gets a longer medical suspension and can't, like, I don't know, if you got such a fucking stick up your ass about him being a criminal and that's why you're okay with him getting fucked over, then what do you think he's going to go do now that his pay is fucked up? He's going to go do more crime.
And that he's probably going to get cut.
Probably going to get cut off of this one, which is bullshit because, I don't know, he has potential. He's like fucking 28 and he's got good physical attributes.
Yeah, he should at least be getting cut off of a fair loss.
Yeah, especially since he's like, he's 2-2 in the UFC. And both of his wins are against people that are, like, they also shouldn't be in the UFC.
Kevin Holland versus Kyle Daukaus got overturned because it was ruled that the clash of heads was what led to the finishing sequence, even though there was a much longer period of time between the foul and the finish in that fight. And that was in Vegas.
Yeah, all fairness in the sport's gone. Yeah, there's just no principles in the officiating at all. They're completely unwilling to do the right thing if it doesn't suit their gain, like what they gain from it, because they get nothing from going through all the fucking legal shit to overrule Cedricus Dumas' loss and change his record. He just has an eye poke knockout loss now, and same with Bruno Silva, who, and both fighters are already having a bad time in the UFC. So then they get fucked over even more, and then no one's there to help them. So fuck the UFC for that one. The rest of the card, Nate Landwehr is very good. He's just fucking always going to stay in there. And Jamal Emmers broke mentally because he got good offense off, and then his opponent didn't go away, and Nate Landwehr is going to keep coming at you until he gets you.
Yeah, Jamal Emmers fights like he's a knockout artist now, when he is in fact a solid, well-rounded technician. He went out and tried to smoke Nate Landwehr, and it nearly worked. If it doesn't work, Nate Landwehr, he's going to come back, he's going to put it on you. Kyle Nelson knocking out Bill Algeo was pretty cool. You know, Kyle Nelson has turned absolutely huge corners in his time in the UFC. He was one of those guys who you could see some potential in, but it looked like he was just never going to work the kinks out, and he really might be at this point. People saying this stoppage was early. I did not have a problem with it. Bill Algeo was getting absolutely torched and not firing back in any way, like not defending himself, not throwing back, was just getting chased around, getting punched clean in the mouth. Yeah, I know Bill Algeo is like a fucking warrior. He never gets finished. Let him go out on his shield. It's fucking stupid.
That's dumb. Why, when the guy is so visibly concussed and has been concussed badly by each of these shots, why let him go out? You know, he wasn't going to recover.
No, I always say I'd rather see refs err on the side of caution and see more early-ish stoppages than late ones. I don't even really think this was an early stoppage.
If you have a good eye for fighting, you do not think that was an early stoppage.
If you've watched any boxing,
I've seen someone come back from that level of fucked up maybe like twice.
Well, and this is the thing, that even if they come back from it, that doesn't mean that it was a good decision not to stop the fight.
No. Anytime I've seen someone come back from it, I thought the fight should have been stopped.
No, I still maintain that Merab should have been stopped against Amala Marais, and just because he's a fucking animal and was able to work through it and get the job done, that doesn't mean that he should have been like just allowed to eat the same left hook 9 times in a row.
Yeah, officiating is again, corrupt, and they tend to err on the side of paying attention to who the fighter is rather than just the objective standards of what is supposed to be a finish.
See, I never even draw those dots. I always just put it down to just, like, generally bad officiating.
I normally do too, but the ref, like, knew it was Merab, which is dumb. This one, if they had done that, I would have been pissed. So, good on the referee for stopping this fight.
Yeah, for not being like, oh no, Bill Algeo is a warrior.
Julio Arce knocked out Herbert Burns. It was a pretty nice finish, but Herbert Burns just shouldn't be in the UFC anymore.
No, he's an absolute one-round assassin.
And even then, it's like lowercase assassin. Like he's pretty good in the first round, but he's not crazy. Nothing crazy in the first round.
No, I mean, knocked out Nate Landwehr. Actually just smoked Nate Landwehr before he was able to get it rolling, which, you know, he would have fucking ended Herbert Burns' life if he had gotten it back in that one.
Well, also, just like shit happens, and it was 4 years ago. Maybe he should have been in the UFC 4 years ago, but at this point, there's no reason for Herbert Burns to still be in the UFC other than fighting out his contract until they cut him.
No, and Julio Arce is too solid and consistent to be that kind of guy against, even though he's not a big like KO finisher. He's
consistent enough. He'll break someone that
he's too offensively tired. Sharp that if you're looking for a way out, he's going to give you it, you know?
Yeah, Jacob Malkoon has a like death touch in his hip, and Andre Petroski ducked down, and you can actually see he got a cut on his head from the hip bone. So he got fucked up by the hip. He just got hip thrusted real hard. He didn't even really get sprawled on. He kind of just like dove at Jacob Malkoon's hip and got finished by ground strikes after a collision.
What a weird fucking night of fights.
It was a very weird night of fights. The fight was not going Petroski's way. He was getting jabbed. He had some success on the feet, but more due to Malkoon just being kind of wishy-washy on the feet. He has good moments and bad moments. So Malkoon, for the most part, though, was just like jabbing and staying consistent. Was probably going to build up to a finish anyways, or at least a decision win. So that's that card.
So before that, we had the Nami Yunes Hebus card.
Which
was kind of whack, other than Peyton Talbot just absolutely styling on Cameron Simon. And
he's my new favorite prospect right now.
He's awesome. He's
so
like,
fucking offensively potent, and he has all the tools you could possibly need physically.
It's like, what if Sean O'Malley was actually cool?
Yeah, yeah. He's if Sean O'Malley was actually walking the walk in his early career rather than getting super fucking good after people lied about how good he is for years.
Yeah, I mean, Cameron Simon is extremely janky, but he's like crazy tough.
He's not easy to do what Peyton Talbot did to him.
No, but, I mean, you know, his prior loss came to Christian Rodriguez, who we now know is a really well-rounded, sharp technician who fights like a man way beyond his experience. And he
fights like a guy that's been trained with Sergio Pettis for like years.
Yeah, and he just sort of stayed on top of Cameron Simon, and you know, had actual defense and depth to his game. Whereas Peyton Talbot just smoked Cameron Simon. Like that moment where he just walks up to him and just reads Simon like a fucking children's book and just murks him with that step knee, looks so perfectly timed and well placed as Cameron tries to drop in on a takedown attempt.
Yeah, it lands like perfectly on the jaw and neck. And if Cameron Simon wasn't young as fuck, he would have just been completely unconscious. And also Talbot set it up by getting to the fence by catching a kick and then hoisting the leg over his head to off-balance his opponent. And then it was just a very... He could have ran in with a knee like a lot of fighters, you know. Even Max Holloway would have fucking sprint flying knee the guy after that and then gotten taken down. But Peyton Talbot was like, okay, I'm going to slowly measure into range, knee. And also the finish was kind of similar. He just read the timing really well. He has like a great eye for a counter. His mechanics are fine. His defense is kind of shitty, but I expect that of any 26-year-old that hits as hard as he has and has as good of reactions and eyes as he does. He has like some fucking ridiculous proprioception. He does like fucking cartwheels out of takedowns and like backflips over people and shit. He's much cooler than he is good right now, but that's not an insult. He, as long as he keeps getting better and he stays this cool, he's going to be around for a while. The UFC fucking loves this guy already.
You can see all of the makings of a serious talent who still has a lot of room to get better.
And seems to have a really good head on his shoulders for this lifestyle of fighting. Like, it doesn't seem like he takes fighting so seriously that it's going to like ruin his life if he takes a loss. I figure if he gets prospect lost, he'll probably just come back better. But, you know, that remains to be seen. He is very early on in his career, so all of this is as much praise as you can give to an 8-0 fighter. But being this good at 8-0, that's pretty fucking remarkable in and of itself. That's basically all that happened on the card. Yusuf Zalal looks better than he used to.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, Edmund Shabazian got a cool knockout.
Julian Arosa got a sub win over Ricardo Ramos.
And then outed himself as a transphobe for some reason.
Yeah, he was like, oh, this is my moment. Also, this isn't like analysis or anything. It's just kind of funny. He brings up a topic from like years ago, something that people aren't even talking about anymore, but he was on a losing streak and he had that queued up since he last lost probably. And was like, oh, I'm going to say this next time I win. He just had to wait to win. And it just took a fucking while.
Yeah, I just don't get it. And it pissed me off because I like Julian Arosa as a fighter, and such a weird thing to be like, yeah, I got a good win. I'm getting my moment. This is what I'm using it for.
Let me call out a swimmer that's taking estrogen and like I would win in a fight against, obviously. It's like no one's saying that trans swimmers are going to beat you in a fist fight, Julian Arosa.
So, yeah, Tai Tuivasa is cooked.
Oh, cooked as fuck. He looked terrible. But also, that kind of could have happened to him at his best in this matchup.
It could have, but it just...
It looked tepid. It was really unimpressive.
Well, and just the fact that he has not taken any lessons away from any of his losses. He has not developed technically in any way. All he was relying on to get back in the win column on this one was just being able to wipe out Marcin Tybura instantly. And nearly worked, but didn't. And Tybura is very scrappy. And if you give him an inch, then... You know, he just needs to find a way to win a scramble, get a decent position. And if you're just not technically equipped to deal with that and you don't just blow him out of the water, then Marcin Tybura is going to stay on you and find a way to get it done. It was just how fucking frustrated Tai was after the fight, where it was like, damn, I was this close. It's like, what were you working on?
Yeah, it was just a very unimpressive performance.
Yeah. You know, there was a moment where it looked like Tai Tuivasa was putting it together. But just the same guy just sometimes gets matchups that he can win.
The rest of the card, OSP had a good performance against Kennedy Nezechiku.
Yeah, OSP, like, pressured and threw volume for the first time in his career now that he's 500 years old. Also, Kennedy and Zetchiku should be embarrassed because he was just like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna have a slick, ranged performance against OSP.
Horrible performance. Completely fighting against type for no reason when his style works really well against this matchup.
Yeah, and against a guy who is really well-defined... That if you have the goods to just like pressure him and walk him into the fence and just blast him, he does not have an answer for that. He didn't have an answer for that when he was winning fights consistently. It's just that OSP is actually like really tough, and in a way that I described similar to Marcin Tybura, will find cracks in a fight that he's losing to be able to turn it around against someone who just does not have the experience or depth to stay on top of him. But it's like Kennedy and Zetchiku didn't even give himself a chance to win this fight. It was absolutely mind-boggling. I guess last thing I actually want to talk about was aforementioned Christian Rodriguez's win over Isaac Dolgarian, which this was a brutal matchmaking for Christian Rodriguez because the UFC brass were obviously mad at him because twice in a row they booked him to lose to one of their big prospects, and then he missed weight and then absolutely sunned the guy that they thought they were like setting up for a win. Which, to be fair, if they thought they were setting those guys up to win, then they should have actually watched some Christian Rodriguez tape. And
C-Rod's fucking hard to bully. You just have to you have to be bigger than him if you want to bully him reliably.
He is so well composed and has this craft beyond his years, and understands the value of just being able to stay in fights that he's losing and stay calm and stay in the fight to get to a place where he can get more done. Because, you know, Isaac Dolgarian, huge, physical, really dangerous wrestler, was all first round finishes leading up to this. And he was all over Christian Rodriguez, but this is what will happen when you see a prospect who's all first round finishes and
you give them a guy that's fucking difficult to finish.
With someone with real craft who can stay in the fight and bring them to a place that they've never been before. And I think Dolgarian still comported himself well considering that. Won the first round dominantly, second round was closer, and then the third round... C-Rod was just keyed in and Dolgarian was gassed and couldn't get the takedowns off. And you know, the moment where he gets sprawled on and didn't even have the energy to stand up, so just like stayed there on all fours and got soccer kicked in the ribs, I was like, oh, he's done. But you know, he still stayed in there. He just got torched for the rest of the round. It was a really close fight, and there's absolutely a case to score it for Dolgarian. It's just one of those things that you watch and it feels right to give Christian Rodriguez the win. It feels like he is the one who figured this fight out down the stretch.
Yeah, I have two quick things I want to talk about. Gerald Meerschaert versus Brian Barberena. Barberena is too small for middleweight, and Gerald Meerschaert is too experienced of a middleweight to lose to a welterweight that was like average-sized, and also a really easy matchup for him, because Brian Barberena isn't...
And who was kind of cooked for several years before he even moved up to middleweight, and Barberena still dropped him.
He did. But Barberena is not fast or explosive, and Gerald Meerschaert is... tall and has a pretty okay sense of range normally, and has a great RNC. And then also, one of my favorite genres of fight, they gave Thiago Moises Mitch Ramirez, which is a guy that just never really has a good performance because they always give him fights that are going to be kind of stale or he's going to get blown out in Thiago Moises. But if you give Thiago Moises a guy this much less experienced than him, he's going to look like fucking the best fighter ever. Because he had the best performance on the card by a fucking shitload, in my opinion, To be fair,
he was supposed to be fighting Brad Riddell, and this guy came in super short notice.
Yeah.
And just clearly a huge mismatch.
Well, to be fair to Mitch Ramirez, because Moises looked amazing.
Oh, he did.
Yeah, I don't hold this against Mitch Ramirez. It was going to be a hard matchup for him, even if he got like a full fight camp.
Yeah, no, he just wasn't ready to be in there with a guy as solid and well-rounded as Thiago Moises. Thiago Moises, he has a lot of flaws that seem to just be deeply baked into him that are going to prevent him from ever really climbing to the elite ranks of the lightweight division. But he is just well-rounded and offensively potent enough in every phase that if you give him a guy who's just not ready to be there, he's going to look like fucking Jose Aldo.
Yeah, I mean, he's fought so many fucking people. He's fought Benil Dariush, Demir Ismagulov, fucking Bobby Green, Michael Johnson, Islam, Alexander Hernet. He's just fought so many fucking fighters that if you give a guy who has as many fights as Moises has elite-level decision losses, then it's just going to add up to Moises leg kick TKOing the guy. I don't think Mitch Ramirez is particularly vulnerable to low kicks for an 8-2 guy. I think it's just what happens if you give a guy that's good at low kicks a guy that is like half as experienced and probably half as physically competent as he is at this point. Because Mitch Ramirez is like 31 and he's 8-2. He's got a bit of a late start, so... It was just very rude matchmaking, but it made Moises look amazing. So that's one of my favorite genres of fights, is ones where you get to see just how good a guy that you tend to underappreciate is.
And they'll probably give Mitch Ramirez a more reasonably booked fight with a decent camp off of this. Like, they tend to like do you a solid if you step in to get torched for a late notice replacement against a relevant fighter.
Yeah, that is one of the more redeeming qualities of the UFC's matchmaking is that there is like some level of rapport that you'll get if you just are their bitch or they have like shit over you. They're like, oh, we'll throw you a bone. We'll give you a fight against a guy that's as good as you. But that was it for the last several cards.
But yeah, next week we got the big one, UFC 300, kind of not as good as UFC 299, but I mean, I'm not going to complain about anything. This card,
the high points are higher.
Absolutely bonkers. Justin Gaethje versus Max Holloway and Charles Oliveira versus Arman Tsarukyan. Those aren't even the top two fights on the card. So super excited to talk about that one. We'll catch you guys then. Peace.
Later.